Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America's great national parks hold some of the country's most sublime natural glories. From the Great Smoky Mountains to the Grand Tetons, Denali to Zion, Yellowstone to Yosemite, these are treasures. Many got their infrastructure of roads and trails in the Great Depression. In recent years, the infrastructure's been falling apart. Now, in deep recession, Americans really want to use it. This hour, On Point, will President Obama's giant stimulus package and public demand bring back the national parks? You can join the conversation. Are you headed out for the parks this summer? Have you seen the wear and tear alongside the breathtaking beauty? What priority should we set on maintaining America's historical national parks? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It happens every year. Here are tourists at Yellowstone's Old Faithful.
Oh, my gosh, look at how high it goes. Now, that's a geyser.
Now, that's a geyser. Everybody loves the parks. From Acadia, right in way up in Maine, right on across the country, but they've been in trouble. The National Parks Conservation Association has been sponsoring an ad campaign to get Americans to restore the country's national parks by the park system's 2016 centennial. Here's a radio ad with Law and Order actor Sam Watterson calling in, quote-unquote, to express his concern.
When we think about our national parks, we have images of cannons on the battlefield at Gettysburg, grizzly bears at Glacier, or the soaring face of Half Dome at Yosemite. And we remember again the visits we've made with family and friends. We don't think of potholes, crumbling historic sites, dusty and neglected artifacts, and school children being turned away from educational programs because there are too few rangers. Yet this is what's happening, because our national parks don't have the federal funding they need.
That's what's happening. We've got a great crew with us today who know the parks inside and out. In a few minutes, we'll hear from a former head of the National Park Service. But joining me first to help us look at all this from Washington is Bill Wade. He spent a lifetime in the Park Service, posted to Yosemite, Mount Rainier, the Grand Canyon, the Great Smoky Mountains, and more. His last position was as superintendent at Shenandoah National Park. He's now chair of the Executive Council of the Coalition of National Park Retirees. Lives now in Tucson, Arizona. Bill, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for asking me.
And from Washington, we're joined by Ron Tipton. He spent 30 years as an advocate for public lands preservation at the Wilderness Society, National Audubon Society, the World Wildlife Fund. He's now with the National Parks Conservation Association. We just heard their ad. Ron Tipton, thank you for joining us.
Great to be with you today, Tom.
All right, so here we are. We have heard for years now about how things are absolutely falling apart. The roads and trails and plumbing and visitor centers. Just one thing after another, $9 billion in overdue maintenance, we're told. And in this package, I see something like $750 million or $900 million. I hear there's kind of celebration going on. At the same time, that seems to fall way short of the need. What's going on, Ron, with the stimulus and the need in our national parks?
Well, we're hopeful that the investment by through the stimulus bill will be the beginning of a renaissance for our national parks, which you aptly described in the intro as both beautiful and affordable. It's actually $920 million if you take all the projects, including the road and bridge maintenance money that's coming out of a separate fund. That would be invested very quickly in a wide range of project needs, everything from buying more alternative fuel buses to taking care of the bathrooms and the trails at the Great Smoky Mountains, to installing solar energy panels at parks, taking care of the long overdue restoration of the visitor center at Dinosaur National Monument in Utah and Colorado, which has been closed now for, I think, 2 years. This would be a great investment towards bringing our parks back to what we remembered them in days gone by.
Though at $900 million, still just a fraction of the what's said to be a $9 billion need. Bill Wade, you spent a lifetime in the parks. I mean, you grew up in Colorado's Mesa Verde National Park. Your dad worked as chief park ranger. You watched them over much of the 20th century. In terms of maintenance and the country taking care of its national parks, give us a sense, Bill, of what you saw in all those years, the arc of, I guess, toward disrepair.
Well, yes, that's true, Tom. What really happens is that when the annual operating program, the money that the parks get to carry out their annual operations, falls short, among the casualties of that deficiency is things like routine, ongoing, and preventive maintenance. And so these kinds of things get deferred on these projects, like you mentioned, park roads, trails, particularly utility systems, many of which were built decades ago, and now are just deteriorating at a rate that that the operating program money can't keep up with. And so all of this then adds up to what we refer to as this deferred or maintenance backlog. And it's not just the parks that we often think of when we think of the national parks like Yellowstone and Grand Canyon and those. Over two-thirds of the units in the national park system are historical or cultural. And many of the historic structures and monuments and memorials and gravestones at places like Gettysburg, cannon carriages, are also deteriorating. And that's probably even more critical because once you lose something that is original in terms of its historic significance, unlike water systems and roads and trails that you can restore and renovate, you can never bring back that loss to the historic fabric of those kinds of areas. So that's another thing that I think the American public ought to understand, and this stimulus package will help start to, you know, chick away at a little bit of those kinds of projects, I think.
Bill, in your experience, how has it changed over the years, the experience of parks visitors, whether they're the great natural parks or the historic parks? I mean, you've seen so much of it. If you look back to, I don't know, I'm not sure how back your memory keenly goes, but, you know, go way back and then bring it up into the 90s and even now, the way that this wear and tear has affected the experience of Americans who visit the national parks, Bill.
Well, there's the obvious things, and then there's the behind-the-scenes things. And I think that what visitors often see are the potholes in the roads and the trails that have deteriorated over the years, many of which might have been built back in the 20s and 30s under the Civilian Conservation Corps and just haven't been kept up in terms of this maintenance need that that goes on every year. So they see the potholes, they see the chipping paint or the leaking roof, perhaps, in a visitor center that damages an interpretive display or something like that. But behind the scenes, some of those problems are even more critical. I grew up in Mesa Verde, as you mentioned, and I know that the water line that brings fresh water for all of the park visitors and so forth into the park comes out of the San Juan Mountains, which is about 30 miles away. That water line I can remember being built when I was a child. So that means it's 60 years old plus. And it's just been failing over the last few years. And I'm glad to see that in this stimulus package, for instance, there is some money to help start to replace some of that water line. But the same is true with septic systems, sewage systems, water treatment plants, all of those kinds of behind-the-scenes things that the visitors never really see or know about, but that sometimes can lead to catastrophic failure and real problems. So it's a combination of all of those, I think.
We'll talk about what's in the stimulus plan for the national parks and what's not. We want to hear from our listeners, many of whom are avid users of the national parks. Bill, Ron, stand by. Kevin in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air. Kevin, what do you see out there?
Yeah. Hey, Tom, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. My friends and I, we're avid hikers. Mostly we're from South Carolina, and I like to hike in the Appalachian Trail, which is a beautiful trail. It goes from North Georgia all the way up to Maine. And the thing about it is that most of the way when we hike it, there's a lot of people who have their foundations that actually keep this trail up, and it goes through several national parks, the Pisgah National Park and a few other major ones on the way up Smoky Mountain. And basically what I was wanting to ask was is there room in any of this for expansion of some of these other, not just the National Park Service, but other programs that we, like, you know, regular hikers who would just like to be able to do things, you know, would be able to maybe come and help or do something like that? Is there any kind of, in this program, do you know of, like, with a stimulus package that would help us to be able to just get involved?
Kevin, it's a great question. Give us your first-hand report first on the Appalachian Trail. You like to hike it. What do you see out there? Do you see evidence of the deteriorating trails and so on?
Yes. That's one of the biggest things. There are a few footbridges along the way. Once you get up into North Georgia on the border of North Carolina and South Carolina, around that area, there's some beautiful trails up there. But there are a few footbridges that actually I was crossing on last spring, as a matter of fact, March, and it was fairly cold up there. But so it was a little bit of snow, and the weather has just ravaged some of those things. They are absolutely falling apart, and a lot of them are cable span bridges, little small ones. They're not major road bridges, but they're pretty precarious. You can easily tip over right over on one of those. They're really falling apart. It's kind of scary. You want to go down in the valley another 6 hours to go back up the side of a mountain, as opposed to walking right across the bridge. It's just something that, you know, and we've been able to donate money and keep it up, you know, through our own personal donations, but these park services just haven't been able to do it. And it's remote areas, you know, it's hard to get to. And
Kevin, that's a great firsthand report. Ron Tipton, we just got a few seconds before the break. I know you walked that trail 30 years ago now.
I did, and it's almost as if Kevin is a setup question, because the first project in the list of Park Service recovery projects listed alphabetically under the stimulus is $613,000 to reconstruct and install footbridges and boardwalks on the Appalachian Trail, which the National Park Service has the overall management responsibility for.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sound there from Waterwheel Falls in California's Yosemite National Park. We're talking this hour about our tattered national parks, what gets rebuilt and what doesn't in the Obama stimulus package. We've been joined by Ron Tipton. He's Senior Vice President at the National Parks Conservation Association, 30 years as an advocate for public lands preservation. And Bill Wade is with us. He spent 34 years in the National Park Service, worked all over Yosemite, Delaware Water Gap, Harper's Ferry, Shenandoah National Park was his last posting there. He joins us today, lives now in Tucson, joins us today from Washington. In just a moment, we're going to hear from former director of the National Park Service in the 1990s. But let's get a couple of calls right here first from Bellevue, Nebraska. Charity, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm glad to hear that you're talking about the Civilian Conservation Corps. My great-grandparents were a part of that out here in Nebraska during the Depression.
Yeah.
And I agree, something you say, that it is something that we need to bring back during these times. We need to end the handouts and get people out working in order to revive the National Park Service.
A whole lot of people got, $20, $30, I'm not sure what it was, a month back in those days, to dig their shovels in and really do a lot of work in the national parks. We'll look at that in just a moment. Let me get one more call here. Thank you, Charity. Errol in Boston, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am actually the author of Riding the Rails. It's about those 250,000 teenagers who hopped freights during the Great Depression, and tens of thousands of them landed up working for the CCC and building our national parks. I'd just like to tell you about one of them.
Yeah.
Okay. There's Jim Mitchell. He was from Wisconsin, and he was on the road for a couple of years before he learned about the parks. He joined the CCC, and a couple of quotes from my book. Jim said, "The CCC and the parks shaped my life, which had no direction. Back home, I had no role models to measure my life against. In the Corps, there were well-educated fellows whose goals had been interrupted. I wanted to be like them." He says to him, the CCC was, in his mind, the poor man's West Point. "We learned everything a West Pointer learned about duty, honor, and obligation. And, as you write, we got $30 in the bargain. These kids would actually keep $5, and they would send $25 home to their parents, who, as you know, were in terrible straits."
Sure.
Finally, one of the things that Jim sort of said, that, you know, living on the road, you know, your life was actually like a dog. You spend all your time wondering about where you're going to eat. And he said, "To this day, I can go and see parks that we built in the CCC. I can see trees we planted." He said, "It's a living legacy. You didn't have a living legacy on the road." And this is the point. I think the whole point is, if the Obama stimulus plan works just, you know, I won't say even a tenth as well as the Roosevelt plan did, it is going to be marvelous for our parks.
Errol, that is absolutely wonderful testimony, the CCC as the poor man's West Point. We'll hear in just a second from Roger Kennedy, who headed the National Park Service. We'll look back and look ahead, but that's just terrific to hear. I've got a little tape. Let me play in response to that, Errol. This is from the summer of 1933 during the Great Depression. President Franklin Roosevelt here is visiting workers. This is a kind of newsreel, who were building out the Shenandoah National Park in Virginia.
Virginia, inspiring his forest army by a personal visit, President Roosevelt makes his first tour of the Civilian Conservation Corps camps in the Shenandoah Valley.
A cheer for the president there, and I've got a little more tape. Let's hear what he had to say on one of those visits.
Very good to be here at these Virginia CCC camps. I wish I could see them all over the country. And I hope that all over the country they're in as fine condition as the camps that I've seen today. I wish that I could take a couple of months off from the White House and come down here and live with them, because I know I'd get full of health the way they have.
FDR with the CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps workers in the Shenandoah National Park there in the 1930s. We're joined right now from Rockville, Maryland by Roger Kennedy. He was director of the National Park Service in the 1990s, director emeritus of the National Museum of American History at the Smithsonian Museum, author of many books. His forthcoming book is When Art Worked, Art, the New Deal, and Democracy. Roger Kennedy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
You hear the testimony from our caller about the sort of diaries of a former CCC worker, and there's FDR. How important was that work that was done during the Great Depression to the national parks, Mr. Kennedy?
He's the guy who made the national park system what it is today. Roosevelt consolidated all the functions that had been in the War Department and the Forest Service and a whole lot of other places and put the national park system together. As he said in Glacier National Park, he was transferring to it battlefield sites and memorials and national monuments. That's the first thing he did, was to organize a function that he's a process that worked, that was well managed and trained for that.
What were the parks before he came along with all of that attention?
Well, there were the parks with the mountains and the waterfalls, of course, that were national parks, but many of them were administered by other people. The battlefields were administered largely by the War Department. They were spread all over the place, and the consolidation of the New Deal had three pieces. First, the piece of getting the work done, some of which was volunteered, and volunteering is still enormously important. Second, the deployment of 600 CCC camps under Park Service management didn't occur, actually. The CCC didn't exist till 1937. Mm-hmm. Before that, it was called Emergency Conservation Work, and it was called National Park Service Work Camps, but the work got done. The essential thing was that the volunteering and the tiny pay that you got for being in those camps during the work, was sensible, intelligent, and manageable because it was accompanied by very large federal expenditures, which is what the stimulus package does. Sure, we need a new AmeriCorps. Sure, we need a new CCC. You bet we do. Sure, we need a lot of volunteer help and a whole lot of volunteer contribution, but the rot and decay has gotten so disgusting, such an affront to us as a proud people, that we're going to need a whole lot of federal money, taxpayer money, too.
Roger Kennedy, give us a sense of that. I remember visiting lots of national parks with my family as a kid. This would have been in, you know, probably the 1960s, and my impression was they were pretty great places.
I was there in the 30s.
Okay, no, but they were pretty great places. They had these magnificent lodges built out of, you know, great log structures, trails all over the place. I mean, I felt proud even as a kid that these were our national parks. What happened to that in the decades since?
You're absolutely correct. This, as Franklin Roosevelt also said in Glacier, all the country belongs to all of the people, and the parks are the embodiment of our sense of ourselves. So right now, as we revive our pride in ourselves, our sense of what we can do, our sense of community and our functioning together, the New Deal comes back in spirit. It's about a way of thinking of our community and of the land we inhabit. That's what we're reviving now. It isn't just the money. It isn't even just the muscles. It's the spirit of it. The New Deal is with us again. Thank goodness.
You're saying the volunteer spirit, but it takes a lot of cash alongside to pump
sure.
the capital in there. Let me get a call on that front from Kittery, Maine. Travis. Hi, Travis. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I'd just like to comment on the point of, you know, getting these people involved with these national parks as far as working. You know, with unemployment at an all-time high, you have all these unemployed carpenters and plumbers and people that are physically able to do this work, regardless if it's preserving cannons or preserving trails or, you know, service buildings or whatever. And I think that if people get involved with actually helping rebuild these parks, they become passionate towards these national treasures, and then they can actually, you know, speak firsthand and educate their friends and family into, you know, the importance of preserving these parks. And you think about how many people live in just a short commute from these large, you know, famous places, and how many of those people that do live in that commute actually partake in those national treasures. And, you know, and I think that as a personal user of the parks, you know, when you feel, you know, obviously, you know, when you feel passionate about these things, then you really can make the effort into preserving them and, you know, and keeping that in mind when it comes time to paying taxes to these.
Absolutely. Travis, you're great. Thanks for calling. Bill Wade, I know you and I think Ron both have just been down on the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. They're observing their 75th anniversary this year. Really interesting story of how that park came to be. But I've been reading there's already a lot of volunteer action around the Great Smokies from people who live there whose families may have actually owned some of that land before it got taken up as a park, Bill.
Yeah, that's true. And the same is true in Shenandoah. It's been remarkable, the outpouring of support that many of the national parks have been able to come, you know, through the volunteers and so forth. And no doubt that has helped immensely. But you're still dealing with the need to get materials, supplies, equipment, all those sorts of things, which don't come free. And I think that's where this stimulus package is going to help. It will focus additional funds so that people who do need jobs and are under these job programs that Roger mentioned, there should be a lot more effectiveness and leverage coming out of it now than just volunteers themselves can do. So, but there's no question about the fact that volunteers are important in almost all national parks, and fortunately for the national park system, especially with the deficiencies in funding, they've come through, and I would expect that to continue.
Ron Tipton, a lot of gnashing of teeth in recent years about what budgets have been and the way the parks have been treated, but here's 750 or 900 million, depending how you count it. And I'm looking at a list of parks where things are going to happen. It just, you know, goes on and on from the Abe Lincoln Birthplace down to Blue Ridge Parkway and Harper's Ferry and Organ Pipe Cactus and Dry Tortugas. What's on the boards, Ron, in the spending that's in the stimulus for the parks? What's planned?
Well, this spending is designed to address the most immediate and critical needs of the parks and the projects that are, as they say, shovel ready. And so what you see in this list is everything from restoration of historic buildings and renovation of restrooms, much spending on rehabilitation of roads and trails and bridges, opportunities to bring alternative energy systems through buses and through solar panels and making buildings more energy efficient, making some of them LEED level designed. All of those things are in this package, but I also want to emphasize that mm-hmm. there is the opportunity through this stimulus bill and through other things that Congress is looking at to address the crying need for, in essence, what Roger called a new CC, and what some of the callers referred to as more volunteers. We just saw passage of a Serve America Act, which is designed to greatly expand AmeriCorps across the country from about 75,000 participants to a quarter million. Coming along behind that is legislation that we've been pushing that would create a National Parks Volunteer Corps. of up to 10,000 people that would give them a stipend that they could use for education if they're young, or if they're older, retired, they wanted to extend that grant to their grandchildren, they could do that. But the idea is that for very low cost, you could bring another 10,000 highly motivated bodies into the national parks. And to end on this comment on the CCC notice, I just wanted to mention that the next Ken Burns film series will be airing on public broadcasting in late September. It is about the history of the national parks, and it's going to be spectacular. Bill and I have both seen many clips from it, and one entire episode focuses on the CCC and what it did for our national parks. The Roosevelt quotes that you played earlier are in that series, as is the footage, and we are hearing that The last president to visit the Great Smoky Mountains was Franklin Roosevelt. We're hearing strong rumors that President Obama will visit the Great Smokies to celebrate the CCC and the 75th anniversary of that park in September.
So a lot of attention coming the National Parks way, not least from Americans looking for a not-too-expensive way to get out into nature this very summer. Roger Kennedy, I've just got you for a few more minutes here.
Yeah, could I just say one thing about the last comment, because it's very, very important. It isn't that presidents just go visit and think it's nice. Franklin Roosevelt took the director of the National Park Service, Horace Albright, up to the Blue Ridge with him for a full day, listened to what was wrong with the park system. Some of it was just almost as wrong as it is now, not quite so bad. And when they got done, the President of the United States said to the Director of the National Park Service, well, do something about it, and come back to me within 24 hours with a list of what you want done. Essentially, that's happened again. The President of the United States and the people who directly work for him have said to the National Park Service, well, tell us what you're ready to do. Tell us what you've been waiting to do. Tell us what you've been preparing to do if you got the dough. And that's what we're seeing today.
Todd in Ithaca, New York, you're on the air.
Hi, how y'all doing? I appreciate the conversation today and also the positive words about the national park system. One of the concerns that I have is that money that gets spent is ended up spent on
next generation.
It gets spent on the administrational overhead frequently, and doesn't actually translate to shovels on the ground. And you know, some of the things that the CCC did back in the 30s, if that was to happen now, the paralysis that would be incurred with the permitting process would be pretty stunning.
Todd, let us look at exactly that. The time is short before my break. Roger Kennedy, what do you say in response to that?
I wouldn't worry too much about that. The National Park Service has been so shrunk in its management ranks that it isn't going to disappear into administration. Besides which, these folks have been getting ready for this now for at least 10 years and more. So it isn't as if they're sort of making projects up. They're ready to go. It's not going to get lost in the permitting process either, because those permitting processes have already been taken care of. They've had plenty of time to get ready for this. So we're not starting up from scratch.
What's on the line here, Roger, with the parks and whether or not we sort of bring them up to snuff or not? How do you see for the country? We just got you for 20 seconds more. What is on the line?
What is on the line is our sense of ourselves. These are the places we chose because they were important to us, because they tell us about ourselves, about our heritage, about what we have in common. This tells us what we want to think about it. As President Roosevelt said, this is about a far-seeing way of looking at our nation. That's really what we're doing. We're defining ourselves by defining our parks.
No less. Roger Kennedy, former director of the National Park Service. Thank you very much for joining us today, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about our tattered national parks and what gets rebuilt and what does not in President Obama's stimulus package. We've been joined by Ron Tipton. He's with the National Parks Conservation Association, joins us today from Washington, and by Bill Wade, who spent a lifetime in the national parks all over this country. He's now he is chair of the Executive Council of the Coalition of National Park Retirees. Let's get a call from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Josh. Josh, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share a story. I was in Yellowstone just a year and a half ago, and I mean, there's no question, just the beauty of the place. But what I did notice is that the areas that had the most infrastructure, the hot springs and the geysers that had walkways and well-paved roads and the like, were probably in the worst shape just because there was so much traffic. There was trash, there was, you know, people walking off the trails and damaging things, which are incredibly fragile national treasures. Mm-hmm. And certain areas that just left me completely in awe of the beauty of the place, were the places that took a half a day, a full day to walk to because so few people did it, areas where you can just stare in, you know, open plains and forests and see nothing for miles around but buffalo. I mean, it's a mixed blessing, and making things more easily accessible to people who might not appreciate what it takes to keep a park run. The individual from the park association probably can say more about that. But
yeah, well, we take your point. I mean, is there such a thing as too much infrastructure? Let us pick it up. Bill Wade, how about it? Should we let it go back to nature and go in and see it pristine? You hear Josh's concern.
Well, I think that's a hard question to answer because, you know, what is too much? Certainly there's a need to take care of visitors that come to parks, and that was what the original intent for most of the facilities development that occurs in parks, even what was done by the CCCs. I mean, the whole Skyline Drive in Shenandoah National Park mm-hmm. was done by the CCC so that people could use that so-called viewing platform to see the forest and the valleys around it. There obviously is a point at which it's appropriate, and probably in some places they were overdeveloped. And certainly with the deterioration of some of those facilities that have been around for a long time, that makes it even more difficult. One of the things that this stimulus package is not going to cover very well, it was touched on, I think, a little bit by your previous caller,
mm-hmm.
is that it's not going to help a lot with the staffing of the National Park Service, the people that are doing the interpretive programs and in some cases even out picking up the trash. And that still is a problem. And I mentioned right at the outset that the annual operating program that the Park Service gets appropriated to them is still deficient by some estimates as much as $800 million a year. So that not only contributes to this increasing maintenance backlog, but it contributes to the lack of staffing to do some of those things that visitors will see and visitors need to enjoy. But overall, the stimulus package, I think, is a wonderful program, and I, like Ron and Roger both have said, I hope it's the beginning of a lot more effort to come to bring the national parks up to standard by 2016, which is the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service. And if we can't focus on it and use that event as a way to bring the American public back to support for the national park system, I'm not sure what we can do.
Bill, we've seen support for the parks rise and fall. There was a big push in the 50s under Eisenhower to bring them back. You've said that anything is good compared to what we've seen in recent years. What's been the problem in recent years? Why were people so, you know, bemoaning the park's fate so loudly in the last half dozen or 10 years?
Well, I think it's just a matter of not only the increasing cost of things, but the competing programs that are competing for appropriations that Congress doles out each year, and, you know, the diminishing amount of the budget that goes to domestic programs. All of those things have sort of conspired to reduce the capability of national parks over the last few years. In the last 10 years, the National Park Service budget, that is to say the annual operating budget, has only increased $100 million. That's in 10 years. So that's a $1 million a year, and that doesn't even keep up with inflation. So it's a matter of domestic priority, certainly, and that's why we're hopeful that things like the Ken Burns series that Ron mentioned and the centennial of the National Park Service and so forth can come together to rally the American public and get them more interested in supporting additional appropriations and additional focus on the national parks so that we can preserve them for what they were intended as we move into the second century.
Let's go to Edith in Cape Vincent, New York. Hi, Edith. You're on the air.
I am on, and I am an 82-year hiker with a seeing eye dog in the San Juan Islands. Oh. And the CCC trails are fantastic. And here is President Obama's opportunity to require personal service of every student before he goes to college to the country. It's about time the kids get some feeling of taking care of our country.
So send them right out to the national parks, hand them a shovel or whatever it takes, and put them to work. Say you, Edith, out there at 82 with the seeing eye dog. You need good trails, and it sounds like you enjoy them. Let me get a call from Brookline, Massachusetts. Dave, you're on the air.
Yes, I've worked as a volunteer in three national parks, and I've been through two disasters in the bathrooms and the facilities in the visitor center, so I know what you're talking about in terms of...
That sounds terrible.
Oh, yeah, it was a mess. I have a question that doesn't relate to... is more long-term, and that is, I read about a year ago in the Christian Science Monitor that there are landowners adjacent to the parks that own about $1.6 billion worth of land. And these are willing sellers. They have archaeological sites and watershed areas that the Park Service would like to acquire. But in the last budget of the Bush administration, they cut the land acquisition budget from something like $244 million down to well less than half of that. Is there anything in the present administration's plans to acquire some of this land? Some of these people can't wait, you know, and they'll sell to developers if they can't sell to the parks.
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think a big issue, Dave, and I'm glad you raised it. Ron Tipton, what about it? Land abutting the parks, and some land, the privately held land that's sort of within the boundaries of parks, is a big issue, isn't it?
It is indeed. The caller is absolutely right on. The Park Service actually has about 1.8 million acres of private land within park boundaries that Congress directed them to acquire and protect, and that has not been purchased, and that the estimated value of that is well over $2 billion now, and the stimulus package doesn't address that. Now, we are hopeful this because this administration has given some signals that they want to put more money into the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is the federal fund that's available to the Park Service for purchasing these inholdings, and there are some modest increases in the president's budget, not nearly enough. I met recently with the chief of land acquisition for the Park Service, and right now, tomorrow, the Park Service could go out and buy $150 million at least of private lands within park boundaries from willing sellers. Some of them are desperate sellers, as the caller indicated, who are ready to sell their land, who are told by the Congress that their lands would be purchased at a reasonable price. And if these lands aren't bought soon, some of these people are going to become more than desperate. They're going to sell to a developer, and we're going to stand by and watch our parks become places for new subdivisions.
Is this what people talk about, some of our most famous vistas, in danger of being vistas of townhouses in the wilderness?
Yeah, it's a shame to even think about that, and it shouldn't happen. And it certainly shouldn't happen within the boundaries of national parks. And we're talking everything from the grand western parks like Zion in Utah, which is one of the most popular parks in the country, where a couple from California recently visited a, quote, recently constructed a retreat center in the center of the park, to places like Valley Forge in Gettysburg and Cuyahoga Valley in Cleveland and Santa Monica Mountains in Los Angeles, which are all in urban and developing areas where the Park Service has a number of pieces of land that are still within its boundaries that they don't own. They don't control the development. And if they don't get more money, they're going to stand by and watch these parks be divided up.
But, Bill, this $900 million doesn't come close to being enough to go after that. I mean, it'll all be gobbled up by maintenance needs, won't it? This isn't the kind of commitment that would lead to that. This is $900 million with a $9 billion backlog of maintenance requirements, let alone buying more land.
Well, that's right. As Ron said, this doesn't even touch land acquisition. This is basically to start chipping away at that maintenance backlog and some restoration of natural systems and making buildings more energy efficient and so forth. So there's some forward-looking things there rather than just catch-up. But, you know, it isn't enough. Some estimates have that maintenance backlog as much as $13 billion. So, again, we're just hoping that this is the first step toward trying to move the national park system to a better state of repair. And through job stimulus programs that come along with this, and, you know, we hope either additional appropriations or additional focus of similar kinds of stimulus programs or whatever might happen in the future, that we can bring that gap a lot closer to where the parks need to be.
Let's go to Steve in Charleston, South Carolina. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm interested to know if the any of the stimulus money will go to the National Mall in Washington, D.C. My wife and I spent three years ago spent the summer there, and we're just appalled by the status of the mall, the garbage, the lack of upkeep, and the general look at our nation's capital. And I didn't know if that comes under the Interior Service or what department. We sure hope it will. Some of the funds will get there to take care of that.
Steve, what did you see when you look at it from a distance? When you see it on television, the Lincoln Monument still looks pretty good down there across the tidal pool. The Jefferson Memorial looks pretty good, but when you up close, what was the problem, Steve?
An enormous amount of just trash, just not general upkeep. The grass was there's hardly any grass left. It didn't seem to be watered and fertilized and maintained nicely. Certainly right down around the Capitol itself, it's well kept, but if you just between the Lincoln Memorial and the Capitol, it was just a general condition of not being well maintained, lack of upkeep.
Steve, thanks for the report. Bill Wade, you worked there for a time during your career. What about right in the heart of the nation's capital, around the mall?
Yeah, I did, The caller is certainly accurate about some of the appearance of that, some of which, as I referred to early, is attributable to staffing deficiencies and so therefore probably wouldn't be covered by the stimulus package. But there is money specifically on the list to, for instance, repair the reflecting pool in front of the Lincoln Memorial and shore up the plaza around the Jefferson Memorial, which has been slowly sinking into the tidal basin. So some of those kinds of needs in the National Mall are, in fact, covered by this first round of stimulus package. And so at least some of the rehabilitation and renovation and stabilization of some of those important features in the mall and some of the monuments will take place. But that still leaves us with the need for additional operating money to take care of the things like the trash and, you know, the mowing of the grass and that sort of thing, which is not covered in the stimulus package.
Tom, let me add a comment to that.
Right.
I agree completely with Bill Wade's analysis, and I've lived in Washington a better part of 40 years, and I've watched the decline and degradation of the National Mall, which I think is one of our most iconic and important national park units. And the stimulus money will go towards some very important projects, and hopefully we'll begin to deal with the condition of the grass and the grounds and the trails and the walkways. But there is actually a larger amount of money that was proposed by the president in the initial total stimulus package. There was a separate item for $200 million for the mall, and a number of members of Congress belittled and criticized that
proposal. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
And it was a very ridiculous debate because these are hallowed grounds. These are places all Americans are proud of. People all over the world come here to see the birth of our democracy. And there's no question that this area has been severely degraded, and we need to address this. And I found it really almost stunning that members of Congress would make fun of a proposal that was addressing one of the things that's most important to the sort of the beauty of this country and the nature of our democracy.
Let me get one more call. Amanda in Wilmington, Massachusetts. Amanda, our time is short, but you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for the call.
Yeah.
I just had a quick comment. We are a family of five, and we were looking for an economical way to have a vacation this year.
Mm-hmm.
I was just on the Internet. Is this stimulus money going to affect us this year? Are we going to see certain improvements in the state parks that we're going to be going to so we can get a benefit of it as a family?
Right now, Bill, how about it? Is it going to hit that fast, or might it take a little longer to filter in there?
I think most of the projects, Tom, will take a little bit longer. It's even though, as we've all said, these are shovel-ready projects, which means that a lot of the planning and the compliance and the contracting has been done. You know, by the time you actually get workers out there, I mean, there may be a few indications of immediate positive outlook to this. But some of these are very, very big projects. When you have $5 or $6 million to spend on a particular project, you're not going to do that in the matter of a couple months. So I would expect that visitors to parks 1 and 2 and 3 years from now will really begin to see the benefits of it.
But you know, Amanda, don't be afraid of it. There's such beauty out there, even with the problems. It could be a really good destination anyway. Bill, you spent so much time in these parks, working them in the course of your life. What's your favorite vista or corner? Where do you love just to be out in the national parks? I got half a minute here. Give us a good picture, Bill.
Well, I've been lucky in the parks that I've worked at, but all 391 units of the national park system, I think, are just incredible. And as Roger said, you know, Americans developed these parks or designated these parks to represent ourselves. And it's hard for me to pick a favorite. I can pick favorite views and I can pick favorite places in parks, but I've never been able really to pick a favorite park because each one of them is important in its own way, and collectively they do represent America and where we've come from and where we should go.
Well, they're awfully beautiful. Here's Paige in North Carolina saying, I'm gazing out the window right now at the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. How beautiful, and indeed they are. Ron Tipton, Bill Wade, thanks very much for being with us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.